Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back, and it is Now or Never, and it is not Feedback Friday. We're going to be doing Feedback Friday on Monday, and that's just because I've got two parts to this conversation with Todd Callender, and so by the way, his bio is on other links. That's where I put all of my other contacts, Trevor Lawton's contact information. So his is going to be there as well, his domains and his office number and so forth. Anyway, what we want to do is now that I can actually talk a little bit about the interview, because the conversation was actually just going to be a basic interview. And this is what ends up happening when I start talking to people. We really start diving into the Constitution just, you know, because people don't understand that I actually know the Constitution pretty good. I will say probably better than most, not necessarily, you know, Madison, but I mean, I wasn't the author and the designer, and it took me a long time to get it. I mean, I'd been reading these documents since I was in the Marine Corps, but it takes a while. And what helps is having somebody that kind of understands and has gone through it. I think I can help, and I think I've been helping you, the listeners, in connecting the dots a lot faster because, you know, you may not be as dense as me. I don't know. I don't consider myself the brightest person in the room. And that's always, you know, I tell everybody, I advise everybody, whenever you go into negotiations, do not go into the room like you are the smartest person there. Walk in there with humility, because if you're humble, you can actually allow them to expose themselves so that you can see what they're made of. Because a lot of times, if you go in like the shining star, you know, you blind everybody and you really do not get the most out of that meeting. You might think you get an advantage, but 9 times out of 10, if it's like when people want to help me, I talk to people all the time, I want to help you. And they say, well, you know, what can I do for you? And I go, well, you need to know me before you can really help me. And they just don't get that, because 9 times out of 10, they have resources. I need to know them too. They have resources and abilities and so forth that I don't know. Only they know. And sometimes they just can't think, wow, you know, I've got these resources over here, and I think that would really help you. But until you get to know me, you can't connect those dots. A lot of times people think it's just money. A lot of times I'm going to tell you what it really is knowing other people. You know, the common term I hear all the time, and I heard it all the time, and I've been kind of been sick of it since the military, you know, and they call it a force multiplier. They call that the term force multiplier. And it got into business, and I'm going, really? Anyway, so, it's jargon. And there's some jargon that, you know, or I should say adages, what have you, that, you know, I don't want to say trigger me, but I don't want to embrace those things. And it really bothers me that you'll actually hear me say, to be honest, because, you know, I too have been programmed to say that. You know, it's not like I haven't been honest, right? So why would we say to be honest? Anyway, like I said last week, I think it was last week or earlier this week, I had a good laugh with Woody in talking about, you know, to be honest, that use of that phrase and so forth. But anyway, when we get into this interview and or this conversation, Todd is going to expose a couple of services that he has. I know a lot of people have been out on, you know, Frank Speech and these other little platforms and so forth. What he has is he has Truth Hub and Clout Hub. Now, these are kind of social platforms that are, you know, competing with Zoom type of things, so you can have meetings and that type of stuff. And you can do collaboration. And I don't want to undersell it. Go check out Truth Hub. And the links are right there on the website. They're right there on the other info or the other links. and just, you know, it's towards the very bottom of the site, and it's not like it's the least important. It's just a reference point that doesn't change that much. And so click on that, go look at his content, and there's a third one. And let me see, I forget what it is, but I can always go there because it's up there right now. And when I click on other links, you'll notice that he's right there on top, right underneath recommended sites, and boom, there's Todd S. Calendar. And so, it's Disabled Rights Advocates. So he's an advocate for people with disabilities. And so it's one of those things we didn't dive into, we didn't talk about. But, you know, I perceive that he'll probably have a pretty interesting perspective, or at least he'll enjoy my perspective on it. And so look at his info, and if you follow him, if you actually start listening, he is a weapon. He is out there using his trade, his legal expertise, in attacking people on the Constitution. And he's right on this. If you have not taken your oath of office, you are an illegitimate public servant, and everything you do is illegitimate. You do not have the authority. Just like Biden does not have the authority to be the president. Congress violated the Constitution, and they have actually placed us into a constitutional crisis. I mean, we've been in a constitutional crisis in so many different degrees, but this is the epitome of an unconstitutional crisis, or I should say a constitutional crisis of unconstitutional problems and effects. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So don't forget, folks, this is part two of my interview with Todd Calendar. So we're going to be right in the middle of this starting now.
I don't know what's happened. Maybe somebody doesn't want us having this conversation.
I have to tell you, I so much admire your knowledge of our country.
It's
fabulous.
And so, actually, so let me get back to what you just said, though. The U.S. Constitution actually did create the U.S. citizen, because the Privileges and Immunities Clause existed. And as a matter of fact, they actually took jurisdiction over U.S. citizens when they basically declared jurisdiction over all laws or violations of the laws of nations or violations of laws committed on the high seas. So, in other words, the U.S. government...
That's it.
Right.
You've got it. So, what they did is they usurped the law, right? That 14th Amendment is what created the corporation.
Actually, it did. So, the Organic Act created the... So,
I understand.
Being a student...
A couple years later.
Correct. A student of this. So, actually, if you look at Section 4, you'll actually see why Britain came in with a lot of money and actually bought Congress in the 1870 election, so that in 1871 they could get the Organic Act passed.
Sure, of course. And it's all I'm saying is that the pretext for the usurpation of rights and privileges was born out of the 14th Amendment. All I'm saying is that simply transferred or maybe endorsed that to the corporation itself. But it didn't add anything. People already enjoyed those rights.
Well, so what it did do is it forced the federal or the it forced the state governments to actually have to comply to these same standards of the Bill of Rights. And what I was going to say is if you read Section 4 is why everybody on both sides of the aisle, it's Section 4 that is really tainted, you know, the perception of the 14th Amendment, not rightfully done. But my point is the Section 4 of the 14th Amendment made it impossible for any state in the Union to have to pay any debt of the insurrection. So, in other words, the southern states were then incentivized to become states in the Union, to be readmitted into the Union.
And
that's exactly why, because Britain thought that they'd at least get reimbursed, but the 14th Amendment, by the supreme law of the land, forbade any money to go to any foreign state that tried to meddle in this civil war, which is why they all wanted to get in, because they did not want to have the British, you know, crown collecting on them and actually descending upon them, and basically it would have forced us to fight another war. And so what Britain did was they said, instead of fighting another war, we're buying Congress, and that's how we're going to create this unconstitutional act called the Organic Act. And that's what they did. And that's when our government became corrupt. I mean, that was really the, sure, and this is when the Fabians, just 10 years later, the Fabians were basically, you know, I'll just say it's like they formed a beachhead in our Ivy class schools, and they took over our education system in 1880s. And that's when communism was becoming ingrained, and the communist economic models, the Keynesian models and so forth that came out of that all came from the Fabian Society. Which actually came from Britain. This is all coming from Britain.
Yeah, I do know that. So, including Keynes and all that nonsense, the political economy of the sense.
Right. So to be clear, most people have a really bad label on the 14th Amendment. I'm telling you, the divine hand of providence was directly involved in that one amendment, because it gave us everything we needed. Look at the second section. The second section basically says no state can count apportionment if they deny any U.S. citizen the privilege to vote, which actually secures the idea that only U.S. citizens can vote, and that's how apportionment is to be based. So when we look today, how in 1980, when Jimmy Carter actually said, based on the census, we're going to count everybody for apportionment, he's directly violating Section 2 of the 14th Amendment.
I actually hadn't thought about that. Oh, fascinating. That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
You know, I'm here to help, and I'm not from the government.
Those are important words right there. Here, what does GR stand for?
It's my pseudonym, because if you read what I talk about with Republic Review, because I know you're not even familiar with the stuff I'm doing, I spent 35 years in the intelligence community.
Good for you. So you know the belly of the beast yourself.
Yes, and so I know the importance of having some form of autonomy. Now, I know that when I finally get to a point that I'm, you know, really, you know, irritating the underbelly of the beast, then okay. But I'm not there yet, so they haven't taken me out.
God love you, man.
Well, it's such an interesting dichotomy. I still have friends and, you know, inside and those that are out. I work with about 300 retired generals, by the way.
And it's such an interesting dichotomy that half of our government are still, you know, good guys. They mean to do the right thing, and the other half are just pure freaking evil.
Yeah, but see, what they think is the right thing is actually not the right thing at all, because they're living in a house of cards,
and they
have no idea. So I have a video that actually and academically proves that the Department of Transportation is unconstitutional without an amendment.
Sure it is.
And so you may not know, but we actually have three presidents veto congressional attempts of setting the footings in place to create the Department of Transportation. Madison, Monroe, and Jackson all vetoed it and told them, based on all your justifications, that power doesn't exist. You've got to amend the Constitution.
Wow. How many people on the inside actually listen to what it is you're saying? I don't know.
I can tell you it's not enough. But there's nobody. I've gone rounds with constitutional professors and so forth. And you know, when it comes to the Constitution, it's really simple. They made a Constitution that could allow anybody to govern us. You just had to stay within the framework of, you know, what was delegated. Politics is not allowed in our government other than those enumerated powers. You want to play politics? You can play it on the declaring war, but you can't play politics on health care. Health care has to be delegated before you can play politics.
And I hope there's people that are listening. You know, it's really cool, the passion that you have for this and what you've learned and what you share. It's so important. It really, really is. I hope, I don't know how big of an audience you have, but I hope it's big and I hope it's growing, because people stop caring. And it's really cool what you're doing, and I think you're probably inspiring people. It's really nifty.
So there's probably things you're not aware of, but if you actually read through Reclaiming the Republic, right there on the homepage, I actually take people through Republic Review, because the states, as Madison tried to do with Jefferson in 1798, they tried to get the states to form a tribunal to force the federal government into compliance. Now, the one thing that they didn't have, they didn't have Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. But the one thing they did have was they had the honor and integrity that was still integral with the character of a man. In other words, you challenged a man and you impugned their character. I mean, that was time for a duel. They actually had duels back then. And so,
you know what? I grew up in Colorado, and back in those days, even, you know, I'm a 54-year-old guy. You know, your honor actually meant something. We'd get in fights, you know, people, those were like dueling words. You know, that kind of a mentality still existed.
Right, right.
When I was a kid.
Right. So what Madison went through in 1800 and then later in 1834, he painstakingly helped explain this whole concept of, they didn't call it Republic Review. I was sitting down with a fellow friend constitutionalist that was, you know, really caught up in this and going, wow, this is just awesome. He says, well, what are you going to call it? And it didn't take me long. I mean, within 5 seconds, I said Republic Review. And he goes, interesting. Cool. You're basically playing on the concept of judicial review, but you're actually playing on the fundamentals that are actually embedded in contract law. And I go, yep, you got it. Because even though Republic Review, the language may not be in the Constitution, it is constitutional based on the premise that the Constitution is a compact. Article 7 actually declares that it be a compact, that it must be ratified, and it identifies who the parties are, the states, because they were the ones that had to ratify it, not the people. And so as you look at this concept of judicial review, the concept of judicial review is not constitutional. The court has no authority to reach down and decide what cases it wants to listen to. It actually has barriers of jurisdiction. If it doesn't arise under this Constitution, they can't even look at it.
So you're making the case of the Federal District Courts in Colorado, the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals right now, and all the issues are not justiciable. Why are they not justiciable? Because Trump declared a national emergency on March 13, 2020, which made the COVID countermeasures a military operation, and they are beyond Article 3 courts, to your point.
Right.
And all of our cases against the DOD have been dismissed, all of them, and there are
some 20 of them.
Interesting. So I actually am writing
on the same basis, by the way.
Yeah,
all saying it's not justiciable.
Right. So, yeah, and they've said, so here's the interesting thing. The Supreme Court has said it's not justiciable for the federal courts to be involved in a Republican form of government, right? And I mean, that's standard. They've actually been on record of saying this. But in 1962 and 1964, based on something they had no jurisdiction over, which was the concept of one vote, one principle, right? They don't have the responsibility of ensuring there's equity or equality of a vote. That's not, the only thing delegated within the Constitution is that nobody can be denied voting privileges based on race, gender, poll tax, or age. Therefore, if somebody's being denied those, then they can step in and say, yeah, you're being denied. But they just can't come in and say, oh, you're right, your vote doesn't equal to this other guy. This was a complete overreach of the court. And not only was it an overreach in the election jurisdiction, but it was an overreach in the Republican form of government, because in article or in these two laws or these two cases, they basically said that states had to reform their Republican form of government based on population, which basically created a Republican democracy.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like your analysis at all, actually, because I think that's the same analysis that kicked all of Trump's, questions, all of his cases, you know, whatever it was, 52 of them, not justiciable. Well, I think that's the analysis they use.
Yeah, but see, so actually, the case that was the case that is that actually has standing is our case. Because 31 states violated the Constitution. And technically, the federal court, we don't want the federal court to be in the state's knickers over elections.
So who hears it? Who's got jurisdiction to hear it?
It has to go through the state courts first. You can't just jump into the federal courts. You actually have to go.
But it's a federal issue, is it not?
No, it's the only thing that's a federal issue is the Electoral College. Even though it's a federal election, all elections are under the cognizance of the state.
Yeah, that's true.
The Electoral
that is all true.
The Electoral College is hands-off states. You have to follow the Constitution on this.
Isn't that the point of it's not Bundy, who is the pro se litigant? Got in front of the Supreme Court twice or certiorari denied. What was his name? Recent deal. Anyway, that wasn't the nature of his case.
It wasn't the nature of his case. The nature of his case was over election fraud and or defrauding the people based on an election with manipulation, government involvement. And they just went down all these
rabbit holes. I don't think so. I thought I actually had read that.
Are you talking about the Bronson case?
The Bronson case.
I interviewed Roy, and they were actually focused on the defrauding of the American people by corruption and so forth. And I'm going, the Electoral College is a real tangible violation. It's a direct violation.
Sure it is.
And that's the only issue that forces the Supreme Court to the table. The problem is, and I've made appeals to state attorney generals, and I do not know why Montana and many of these other states, even South Dakota, why these men have not actually stepped up and said, you're absolutely right. We were denied a true Electoral College election.
Because they've all been bought, that's why.
Probably.
No, and I mean it. I mean all of them. It's unbelievable. You know, you would think that a sheriff in a county would be beyond that reach, and they're not.
Right.
The district attorneys, the sheriffs, they are all bought.
But so here's the thing. I've been public about this since after the election, and even before the election. Bob Schultz and I talked about this, and we created the First Amendment petition, which we served Congress with in December, right after the election. And then I convinced Bob to actually sue them, because the only remedy that they could have done to choose the president was to exercise the 12th Amendment. The 12th Amendment would have actually chosen the president, and that would have secured Trump, because there were 30 states that were red. There were 30 states that were considered Republican in Congress. And there's no doubt in my mind, Pence knew this, and this is why Pence committed treason.
Yeah, you bet he did. That's the way I see it.
Right.
Exactly right.
Right. So, you know, I don't want to be a lawyer, but I do love being right. And I've spent a lot of time researching these issues to where, you know, I defy anybody to actually say that this is not the case. And so it's just I don't know why Trump has not stood up and educated the people on this Electoral College problem.
Well, I think that's all going to shake itself out here in the near future.
So
I really do. It has to be. Because look, let me tell you something. The people, this is resonating. What it is you and I are talking about in terms of a facade of government is becoming so apparent that it's even slapping liberals in the face, where, you know, it's the fifth indictment of Trump is just the bridge too far. they see what's happened. We've got a banana republic, Bolsonaro, Chavista, you know, all that other kind of stuff.
Right.
And they've delegitimized every function of it. So it's happening.
It's in his benefit to actually stand up and actually tell the nation and tell the world that we have this thing called the Electoral College, and this is how it has to form. And in 2020, we had 31 states that directly violated that Constitution. And our courts, we'll give him all the documents. He can actually stand up and say, the D.C. court directly violated. Actually, just so you know the history of this, the D.C. court went forward and actually summoned and basically demanded that Congress respond. Every single one of the members of Congress.
Isn't that Sullivan that actually did that?
May have been. I don't know.
I think it was, actually. I mean, it was just kind of a weird thing because he's the gangster.
It was a female. So it was a Trump-appointed female of the judge that accepted this. So it went out, and then all of a sudden there were a bunch of backdoor rooms to say, hey, hold on. Now, as far as I'm concerned, once a summons goes out, that means that the court has done its due diligence on jurisdiction and standing.
And well, they should. It's actually the court clerk that does
it. It is a requirement before they even waste any lawyers' monies that they've done their due diligence. If not, the court's liable.
Well, state courts dismiss cases sua sponte. So, you know, I think that's probably
I understand that, but we've actually got the case because there is standing. We were all, every American was adversely affected by the failure of Congress by not following the Constitution.
Yeah.
Because now we do not have a legitimate president. We do not have a legitimate government. We're all being harmed.
This is true. All of that is true.
And so, if Trump actually took this, and as a matter of fact, the second thing Trump should actually be doing is not just talking about the election, but, what was the other thing? I totally forgot. There's another issue that he should be. The January 6th fiasco. So Congress locked the doors. Congress shut down the government. Yeah. Article 1, the First Amendment. I call it Article 3, actually, of the 12 amendments. But Article 1, or actually the First Amendment, actually states that Congress can make no law that abridges the privileges. So when they locked those doors so that the people could not petition them, then they actually violated the law of the land. And so all of these January 6th lawyers, I can't believe that not one of them said, hey, we have a right to petition you, and you locked us out. You're the ones that violated the law. And actually, just turn around and charge them and seek, you know, coverage or seek lawsuits and criminal lawsuits against Congress and the leadership. Those people that actually called for that law to be made or for them to lock those doors, because whoever did that was a direct violation of the constitutional rights of we the people.
And you think that's the problem. I mean, at what point, is somebody going to actually stand up?
So if Trump's not doing it, then I have to question, where is he? Where's his scruples on this? He has the Constitution as a weapon. We all should be using it as a weapon instead of just trying to win popularity cases. So it is.
No, I think that actually has to happen, to be fair. That, we're in the midst of watching a facade.
No,
if he doesn't have that form of, populism about, then he's not going to be able to do it. So I think there has to be that.
So granted, I will just use one phrase I've been using now. It's called political theatrics. Because bottom line, when you're standing on the law, you are now on a plank and you're walking that plank. Either you're walking somebody out on it or you're walking back on it. And bottom line is that when you're on the foundation of the Constitution when you're on that plank. Now, I don't understand why lawyers, or not just lawyers, but politicians, I mean, there's always this way of bending the law, trying to find other ways. But when it's so black and white that Trump could actually make this case, it is my concern that when we have billionaires, they no longer find the interest of the law, and they it's hard to separate their self-interests.
Well, why would they? that we've lost morals, ethics, and standards, and that's the problem.
Right, and so I think that that may be one of the reasons why we're seeing these, you know, this lack of true narrative, because, you know, not even one lawyer for these January 6ers even arose with this concept that these guys' rights were violated. How dare you lock these guys up?
This bothers me because I've, you know, provided quite a bit of stuff to some of the lawyers working on this, including the fact that Graves has no other office and therefore he has no authority to be prosecuted.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I get that,
too. They haven't done anything with it.
That's another plank. See, that's a legitimate plank. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, it's a jurisdictional challenge, but then they're stuck in the same place I was, which is I was going to file the writ pro warranto in the D.C. Federal District Court. The problem is none of the freaking judges have an oath of office.
Yeah, so
one of them does.
So here's the question.
So what good is that?
I get it, but you understand ex post facto laws, right? And how is it that the government basically has to allow the people into their house, and then they create a law that says you now can't do that?
That's right.
So
they
I mean. So
they don't care.
So now we've actually added another plank that has to be walked, that these people that have been behind this, they should be called out and they should all be held accountable. And that's exactly what these lawyers, they should have been on the offensive. You know, the best defense is a good offense, right?
Yeah. You're preaching to the choir, brother. We just need, I think you need to raise up a good 2-3 million people willing to, you know, go down and stand on the merits. But absent that,
yes.
This is all academic.
Yes, I agree. And one of the things I can't say enough. I really appreciate your time. I mean, I don't feel like we're operating in an echo chamber. I just think that we're looking and facing the same things and identifying all of these problems and the solutions to it. There are many paths. You can't go down the path of criminal, but I believe, so this is, let me just explain this to you. A First Amendment petition can be considered like it is a legal action, and there is a legal response that a public servant has to respond to. But I believe we need to take it to the Martin Luther level, where we actually need to use this as a public relations campaign at the local level, so that we're literally, and this is why I'm working on hundreds of petitions of violations of the Constitution and throwing these things on these guys' laps and watching them try to dance away from it. Because bottom line, when it comes up for re-election, now we have the goods on them and say, how is it that this guy is actually your representative?
That's
He's not
right.
doing one
That's
thing
exactly right.
to protect you. And so then what we've done is we've created a petitioner that's not using dogma, that's actually pointing the direction. This is the way out. And then these guys will be signing actual pledges or commitments, legal commitments, that if they violate their oath of office, if you petition them, they will forward it through or at least respond to say that's not within the Constitution. I mean, that they will actually respect our rights. And with that, I honestly believe that this is how we get the new wave. We want to start after every election and start using these PR campaigns, because when we're done, we could easily have 100 petitions to hold up in front of the public to say, look at this guy. He's done nothing.
Oh, all of that's true. Look, I get it 100%. I really, really do. And there's a lot of good people that feel similar. It's a function of numbers. And getting enough people to care.
You're right.
And I don't know how that's going to happen. Let me put it this way. I think it is happening because enough people are falling over dead. Enough people took the shots. And this is what I'm praying for. I'm sorry. God, please forgive me. But I'll be direct about this. En banc, I just sent you a copy of what we filed in the 10th Circuit. One of those judges has lost a kid or a sibling or a spouse or a parent because of these shots. And one of them knows that what I'm saying is true in that. And I need just one to give me my day in court. And I pray to God that that person finds their soul to do this. Because if they don't, humanity is already done. We are already enslaved. We're already doomed.
So,
at this point in time, I hope people will wake up and follow your lead.
Have you considered filing a lawsuit against Bill Gates for this as well?
Better yet, I have ready to file an alien tort statute claim, which allows me to bring in all of the treaty obligations of the United States, which includes war crimes, which means that anybody claiming qualified immunity, which they don't enjoy anyway because none of them have an oath of office, but if they did, their qualified immunity goes away by virtue of the treaty obligations. So the answer is yes.
So let me send, I'm going to send you an academic article of basically all the background that basically makes the argument that Bill Gates has been involved in killing kids and sterilizing women across, you know, in India and Africa and so forth. And this guy,
now, hang on.
Go ahead.
Hang on. The reason why I sued is because I was running clinical field trials in Cuba for 3 years for my family's needle-free mass vaccination device. I brought Pfizer and the WHO into Cuba. I've done business with these people. My family tested Gardasil.
Right.
I know all of it.
Oh,
we,
okay.
We knew that half of the kids that showed up for the Gardasil field trial went home sterile. Do you know why half? Because half was a control group. It was designed to cause sterility. The GCH genes,
right.
They're modified by cesium-137.
Right.
They're in everything now. They're in tetanus toxoid, they're in everything. My family still owns the needle-free injector. We've tested all these shots, including the mRNA shots, which is why I filed suit, because all the test animals died. We've been testing mRNA for 20 years.
Okay. So the thing I'm going to add to this, if you're familiar with the Logan Act, Bill Gates does not have the right or responsibility or ability legitimately to be involved in NGOs and to be directly involved in all of these other nations, that at a minimum he should be in jail for a few years. But on top of that, he ought to be facing all these other criminal charges.
For sure. And internationally so. And this is the whole point of our alien tort statute claim. Because we can seek criminal referral from the court based on violations of the war crimes.
Great,
that they have to. It's an interesting point you make. And by the way, one of the things we did look into, along those same lines, we found out that Mr. Austin, not Secretary Austin, he didn't take his oath. Also failed to register under the Foreign Agent Registration Act.
Interesting.
And he has foreign entanglements.
There you go.
He also, you know, all of them are like that. None of them registered under FARA, but they're all taking money from the Chinese and other people.
Right, right. But see, the reality is they have enabled and they've given all of these people this carte blanche access. If you're a billionaire, you can do whatever you want. The laws don't apply to you. And we actually have them, you know, with, I'll call it blood on their hands. We got them on the goods here. And I'm here to help, and I'm not from the government.
Good. Well, let me tell you something. This is really important. I want your help, because I want you to reach back inside of that government that you served and talk to those people that are still there and help them understand one thing really important. Whether they're wearing a badge and a gun or they're in the intel apparatus, it doesn't matter. Who do you serve? Because if their boss doesn't have an oath of office sworn to defend and protect our country, the Constitution, then they are serving themselves. And that means necessarily all that the orders that they have issued are void ab initio. So what does that make them? And the short answer to that question is it makes them mercenaries. They're all mercenaries. And do they want to live with themselves as mercenaries? And I'd like you to express that to them and help them understand that.
So I would give you those few that – so I actually severed my ties via phone and those types of things with all of my former friends in the community, just due to the fact that as I talked to a few of them that were within that circle of trust, that, you know, they can't and won't get involved, and because they've created a law now that if they're involved in any way, they'll lose their retirement and everything else, and they'll be kicked out for cause. They'll be fired. That's exactly it. That's an ex post facto law.
By
virtue of their labor agreement when they were hired, if that law is in effect, then they're protected from a law like that.
But they're not. Why are they not?
Because we're living under the color of law.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Because enforcement is the issue, and this is what I'm trying to say.
Yep.
If these people don't understand that they are the enforcement, that they are enforcing illegal and unlawful orders.
Right.
They are the problem. And if they want to be mercenaries and go to their grave as a mercenary, so be it.
Yeah, I, you know, that's why I severed my ties. I mean, I love these guys. I know what they're capable of, but I'm just so disappointed in what they've done and what they're allowing to happen, if that makes any sense. Because bottom line,
they
could be, there's no reason why they can't stand up as a whistleblower.
That's right. Well, the good news is my firm, we've represented, I don't even know how many, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of whistleblowers. So when I sued the DOD, in thousands, I couldn't tell you how many people in the service came to our help for our firm. But it wasn't just military that came. We got whistleblowers from every branch of government, special agents, AUSAs, you name it. We've represented them as whistleblowers. There are tons of them. And it really isn't making that much of a difference, except I would tell you this was very surprising. We've used Senator Johnson's office to, the statute requires that you publish with an elected member of Congress or a political representative, the way the statute reads. In any event, we've used Senator Johnson for his purpose, and none of our whistleblowers have had reprisals, not one of them. And some of them are extraordinarily public. Teresa Long, Lieutenant Colonel Teresa Long, MD flight surgeon, probably the most famous flight surgeon in the world, Pete Chambers. All of these are big names out there, and none of them have suffered reprisal.
Right. So I'm actually getting close to my second hour.
Yeah, sorry.
It's okay. This is all good. What I think is really important is, this information is always, available, or at least so the people can hear this. And it doesn't hurt me to hear you say, yeah, you're spot on, because, it's not this. I'm not doing this for my benefit. Again, I'm not making any money. I love to be right, as I told you. So there's that little bit of that ego thing.
And you're good at it, too.
But more importantly, glory be to him.
That's right. All glory to God, brother.
And so what I'd like to do is, because I know you actually have Cloud Hub, and I know that you've got these other things going on. And so I'd like to talk to you about opportunities. As a matter of fact, I'd like to talk to you about, how we can, I'll just say, it's not about enterprise, but because funding is critical for a movement. And if we can create a self-funding where people don't get paid, but they don't have the inhibition of not being able to have money to, do the things that we need to do, then I'd like to talk to you about that. Obviously, we don't have to do that over the air, but I would like to talk to you about Cloud Hub. And, if I believe that's your company as well as the Truth Hub, right?
Yeah, that's right. What you're using right now, we own 50% of this to join enterprise with Worldwide Tech. And the answer is, yeah, sure. I mean, let us build you a channel on Cloud Hub. Let us help get you a bigger audience that can deliver some revenues and hopefully turn you into a force multiplier.
Yeah, so there we go. And we can talk about how that can be done, but I'm looking at getting and making AM radio relevant again, because, and we can talk about it, but what I'd like to do is, this is correct me if I'm wrong, if somebody wanted to create a connection, do they only speak to people within your organization, or can they create an account and actually have, just like with Skype, just like with Zoom or what have you? Is it basically the same thing?
So they don't need me to do anything. Right now, Truth Hub, what you're on is with the instant translation software as a paid version at this moment.
Okay.
However, Tuesday night, we are launching the free version so that people don't need to buy it. If they go to clouthub.com and they go to the meeting section, they'll be able to do that. And they can also just set up their own channel and do their own live streaming. They can chat. They can
Awesome.
Form groups. If you haven't done it, go to clouthub.com and just, take a look around. We inherited a lot of problems when we acquired this company, I guess, 5 months ago. And we've worked really hard to fix all the issues. There are some still outstanding, but we've come a long way. So I just would ask, give us a little bit of patience and understanding as we this whole thing.
In also in parallel with my intelligence community, I spent quite a few years as a systems engineer, so I know it's not easy integrating and chasing down bugs and sparks and
dear Lord above, it is a challenge. But you know, here's the cool part in this journey. Whether that's Cloud Hub or you know, in this fight that we've been in, the best part about this is meeting good souls that they're brothers and sisters in Christ, and we've all found each other, you know, walking this very strange path. That's really cool.
Right.
Grateful to be here.
So the other thing I'll just throw out there, do you know, because I saw on one of your interviews, you were interviewing Trevor Lawton. Do you know him or...
Which Trevor?
Trevor Lawton, the New Zealander, the Kiwi with fuzz. Anyway, he's the guy that wrote the book and did the movie The Enemy Within, and he's a subject matter expert on the communist infiltration.
I know of him. May know him, but I don't remember interviewing him.
Oh, okay. It was actually one of the a girl, I think it was on Cloud Hub, one of the ad videos that you had when I looked at the commercial side of this. And it basically had a good interview with Trevor Lawton talking about, I think it was about the pandemic and we're entering World War III and so forth. Wow. So anyway.
Well, it could be. I know exactly who you're talking about. I'm sorry. I got to tell you, I've got three full-time jobs, but it's hard to keep it all straight in my head.
I get it. This is a full-time job, and I'm happy to spread myself thinner as long as I can do it efficaciously.
Ah, good man. Well, listen, I want to be helpful to you. I'd like to be a force multiplier. So,
all right,
come on board. Let us help you.
I appreciate that, and I thank you for your time. And hopefully we'll be able to reconnect. But what I'm going to do is I will send you this document. It's called Accountability of International NGOs. And the whole document is about Bill Gates and what he's done.
Beautiful.
He has bought his way into buying nine pharmaceutical companies, buying an NGO, and basically operating under the protection of the United States government, trying to create a global, governing force. So anyway,
this is important. I know you got to go, but this is something I've explained and done quite a few lectures on. It is the use of public health as a weapon. Most people don't realize that the public health apparatus is now the Department of Defense. We are living under military medical martial law, and all of the legislatures of this planet used the time and the authority to force us into a cattle chute such that the declaration of a public health emergency of international concern removed all of our human rights, not just constitutional, but human rights as well. We sit there today at this very moment.
So I'll send you my petition regarding medical freedom and a few other petitions, because I think you'd love them, because they had no constitutional authority to assume these things. The Department of Transportation, which they actually had some justification with post roads and so forth, and common defense. I mean, they had six justifications out of the list of powers. And Monroe said, even if you combined all of them, that power still doesn't exist. You have to amend the Constitution.
That's right.
Anyway, so exactly.
Nicely done.
I would love to see your feedback on these things. And some of these things are still, in a draft form, or they can always. As a matter of fact, we create these petitions so that they're a work in progress. So when people sign the petition, we actually let them know that this petition will change if we can make it better. It will change. But the content and substance of this petition will not change.
Okay. Good.
There we go.
And I'm also introducing to you, as I send this, two of our websites and teams that do this kind of work, including creating templates. So
awesome. All right.
Well, awesome.
God bless you.
What a pleasure.
God bless you for everything
Likewise.
You're doing, and thank you so much for your time. And I'll try to reconnect with you when you've got, if you've got more.
Good.
I mean, obviously, we now need to question and verify the legitimate oaths and know what to look for, because if we don't have notarized
oaths of office, then, you know, we're being sold a bill of goods. And that's important. Because I do know about the bonds, but we are seeing that they're still supposedly performing those. So we'll run that down on our end as well. Because that's the first thing we do before we petition the county commissioners or supervisors is to get the full affirmation that they have sworn in so that we can hold them accountable to that oath or affirmation. So, yeah.
Yeah, good.
Awesome.
All right, brother.
Thank you so much.
Godspeed.
You bet.
You bet.
Bye now.
Well, so I'm hoping you love that. I'm hoping we'll actually create some synergy in working with Mr. Callender. But anyway, we'll be right back after this break. So thank you so much. And like I said, we'll be right back.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
I will just barely have a little over a minute, and so I will have to confess, it is getting so intense. My life is getting so intense. I still sleep like a baby because the only thing that really keeps me from sleeping is not knowing and not understanding. But once I have a good understanding, I sleep the sleep of the just. And so the intensity is the fact that I am now, you know, literally looking at, you know, I have to work as a router. Do you know, how many packets can I send down this path, or how much work can I do here when I know I've got all of this work to do on a day, and trying to prioritize so that I can get as much done as I possibly can. Now, those who listen to this show because I work with you, you'll probably appreciate this far more than, you know, my average listeners. And that's only because you understand what we're doing, what you need done, what you need me to do, and so forth. And so I hope everybody can start understanding that we need everybody's hands in this mix. We need everybody's heads and focus in this fight. Because if we don't do this, if we, the people, do not unite on the Constitution and take a stand, well, I can tell you that we will be held accountable. But I will also tell you that it won't go well. It won't bode well for you. Your children should be able to look at you and say, why didn't you do something? More importantly, remember this, that those who actually take those steps, as I've said in this interview, and I've said it many times, those who actually walk out and step in faith and do those things that need to be done, you will be blessed. Why deny yourself these blessings when you can actually start acting today? I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.